Game, Spots Wrestling Podcast, filled with wrestling, friendship, and wrestling with friendship. I am your host, 40 over 40, Matt Elfring, and with me, as always, none other than Chris Hayner. Hi.
Join the Dark Order, Matt. JoinTheDarkOrder.com. I'm sorry, join Dark Order.
Join.
Happy birthday, Matt. We did it.
We did it. 100 episodes, even though this is technically episode 118. This is our 100th episode.
Before we get deep into this, as I informed Matt, after episode 100, we're skipping directly to 119. The numbering system for our podcast is too much. We're just going to start next week's episode, which I'll tease it now. It's going to be a real good one, baby. Next week's episode is going to be episode 119. The first episode after 100 is 119. That's just the way it is. Deal with it, nerds.
118 missing episodes.
The episodes aren't going away. We're not going to get rid of the episodes.
Here's what's happening. No one should care about this other than us. We do a lot of mini episodes and things like that. Those are just going to be regular episodes now. Screw it.
Yeah. Yeah, we're cool. We can do what we want.
Anyway, Chris, we have a full menu, a steakhouse type menu tonight. What is on that menu?
Matt, I think of films like I think of steaks.
Mm-hmm.
A good film, a true piece of cinema, is like an incredibly well-cooked, medium-rare filet mignon. This is like cube steak. We're going to talk about...
No, this is a filet mignon.
This is
all the fixings.
This is like those cheese steaks that you buy in the freezer section.
Steakums.
This is the steakums of film.
I disagree.
It's great, but it's bad.
We are finally talking about the movie Ready to Rumble, a movie we pitched this podcast, this was going to be an early episode of it.
And then
it took 100 episodes.
It took 100 episodes because we kept building up the specter of Ready to Rumble in our mind.
Mm-hmm. And with us is Tamor Hussein. Tamor! Oh, we didn't. No, we didn't.
What?
I'm joking.
It's like, did you bring Tam on and not tell me?
Originally,
Tam was going to be on the episode.
A year ago.
Wow. By the way, if my audio sounds weird, it's because the washing machine is running outside my office and I can't stop it.
No, you can't. I believe originally this was going to be episode 69, just for jokes.
Nice.
And Tam was going to be on, but then Tam got busy. And then my other thing was, we'll have Chastity on. And then I just never got around to contacting Chastity. Guys, it's been very busy. We will have Tam and Chastity.
We wanted to have David Arquette on at one point, too.
We had a connection for that and then
we never followed up on it. We're really bad at staying organized because we're very busy people.
Very busy people. It's hard to get guests on. But hey, next week there's a whole hour interview going up.
That's right, baby.
Oof. Long an interview where I thought we'd have 15 minutes, Chris.
I'll tell you, I'm just gonna go ahead and spoil it. Yesterday we sat down with the one and only AEW superstar Adam Cole. I believe this is his third appearance on the show. And we talked about no wrestling whatsoever. We only talked about video games, and you know what? It's delightful.
It's our new segment. Hey, here's Adam Cole. No wrestling questions.
Yeah. Because like
that wasn't his request. That was our request.
And he was more than pleased by it. Because honestly, sometimes we want to talk about stuff that's not wrestling. And we all love playing video games. And you know what? We all love Adam Cole, baby.
Did you know outside of wrestling, wrestlers have interesting lives?
No.
But that's our new thing. Okay. Did you know that Jimmy Hart sang I'm a Sexy Boy during
Shawn Michaels? That is hot breaking news.
No, no one picked that up, which I love. That's from last week's episode where I just spliced together all of those interviews.
I enjoyed it, first of all. Okay. Even though the audio is terrible. You got to work on the settings for your Tascam.
I don't know how.
Well, Matt, look on the internet for a PDF guide.
Yeah, we also, like, I hadn't used my Tascam in like 2 years.
No, I understand. I'm talking about for the future.
Oh, I'm never doing that again.
Okay, cool.
Does Tascam audio get a lot better than that? Because yes. I've screwed with it and it, okay.
Yes. All right. So, yeah, I meant to write up breakouts from those interviews. I wanted to write about the sexy boy thing. I wanted to write about Naomi, and then like everything else got in the way. So, hey, if you are a listener to the pod, you got some exclusives.
Got some hot exclusives.
Got some good old exclusives.
Dirt there. Sheets don't listen to this show.
Yeah, baby. Yet.
Yeah, never. Hey, we're talking about a classic. Oh, don't start playing Voodoo. Don't you dare start playing, you rascally rabbit. We're talking about a movie from the year 2000. Chris, let's talk about the year 2000 in general.
In the year 2000.
That was a thing still going on Conan O'Brien.
Long after the year 2000.
Long even. After the year 2000. We were both seniors in high school, graduating at that point.
I was class of 2000.
Same here. Class of 2000. We lived in a society and culture that really catered towards white teenage men.
Oh, just man.
Really? Oh, yeah.
We were in the heyday, like the first peak of Kid Rock. This was the Ba with the Ba era of music.
Chris, I saw.
Speaking of Ba with the Ba, I believe is in the movie.
It is. As I was saying before, I was rudely interrupted.
Yeah.
Chris, I saw Kid Rock and Limp Bizkit.
Ooh.
Same show.
Cool.
As a concert.
Wow.
And I was given a free ticket and I went. And
I would have done
Kid Rock was pretty great. I don't like his music. I've never really been into Kid Rock.
But he likes pretty great. He likes to put on a show.
Yeah, it's a great show. Limp Bizkit. I just like their guitarist and bassist. I think they're very talented chaps. Yeah. Their drummer's good too.
The weirdest double bill I ever saw was Marilyn Manson and Alice Cooper.
That doesn't seem that weird.
Alice is an incredible showman.
Yeah.
Manson was like whacked out on drugs and rolling around on stage, just like screaming into his microphone by the end of the show. It wasn't great. It wasn't great.
No. I've seen White Zombie and Rob Zombie. And let me tell you something. Rob Zombie's live show, like this is like the Dracula era.
Yeah.
Phenomenal.
Is Durango doing 95?
White Zombie also great. Anyway, that's the year 2000. We just talked about it again, catering to white dudes in their teen. That's really what that time period was about. We were the perfect ripe age for that. Wrestling was gigantic.
Yep.
WCW was kind of having a falling out. They were on their downturn at this point.
The decline was happening.
Decline is the word I was looking for. They had about a year left in the company before the company was bought by Shane McMahon. Wink.
Wink.
So we're not getting the best of WCW. However, I didn't do any research about the making of this movie because I don't care about that too much. This feels like a last ditch effort to get like people that aren't into wrestling somehow, which is weird because this is the most popular wrestling has ever been in the history of America at this point in time. And I would argue, I don't think it'll ever reach that popularity ever again.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to be real hard to top that. So wrestling at this point in time, if you probably know it's Attitude Era. It's just, edgy counterculture programming, women being treated as objects, nudity, swearing, edgelord type stuff. We'd call that now, but back then it was.
And it's all in this movie.
It's all here.
Along with Disco Inferno.
Everyone's favorite Disco Inferno. This movie was directed, Ray DeRumble was directed by Brian Robbins, who you would know from, Norbit.
Are you trying to think of he directed Good Burger, first of all. Pardon yourself.
Good Burger's great, but he also has like he also did all of Eddie Murphy's later movies.
He did A Thousand Words, the movie where Eddie Murphy, one of the funniest people on the planet, can't talk or he'll die.
Yes. Meet Dave, Norbert, Tim Allen's The Shaggy Dog, Kevin Spacey's The Perfect Score, which I liked, except a weirdly whitewashed movie, by the way, but Varsity Blues he also did. So he's got good movies in there. Written by Stephen Brill, who
I'm sorry, did you say Kevin Spacey's The Perfect Score?
Yeah.
Kevin Spacey's not in The Perfect Score.
Am I losing my mind?
I think you're thinking of a different movie. The Perfect Score.
I'm thinking of 21.
Thinking of the blackjack movie.
Yes.
No, The Perfect Score is like a teens who like pull off a heist and it's Chris Evans. Erica Christensen, swim fan, I think.
I am Erica Christensen, Scarlett Johansson, Chris Evans.
There you go.
Okay, I apologize. Matthew Lillard. I just got through a Matthew Lillard. Okay, and this is written by a Adam Sandler writer who wrote Heavyweights, by the way, and Heavyweights is one of the most perfect camp movies of that era.
Who's Steve Brill?
Yeah.
He also wrote the Mighty Ducks movies, dude.
Yeah. This like, guy,
Steve Brill has written some really good stuff and some really terrible stuff.
Chris, also Mighty Ducks of the Game Changers.
Yeah.
Great show.
Actually, he stopped, like I'm looking at his Wikipedia now. He stopped writing at a certain point and just directed garbage like Movie 43. And Sandy Wexler.
He directed a sequence in Movie 43. There's like 13 sketches in that or whatever.
He also won the Golden Raspberry Award for worst director.
Good for him. Yeah, he directed a bunch of
Hubie Halloween. Come on,
a bunch of Happy Madison type stuff.
Yeah,
which makes sense when you watch Ready to Rumble. Ready to Rumble stars David Arquette as Gordy Boggs. Scott Conn is Sean Dawkins. Two very weird names for characters.
I appreciate that it's the S-E-A-N, Sean, scene for Sean.
Yes, yeah.
Let's run through the majority of this cast. Oliver Platt. Oliver Platt, a proper actor. Oliver Platt is an incredible character actor who plays, like, yes, he's done silly, silly movies before. That's fine. And he can. But, like, for me, as someone who watched this movie when it came out, I was like, yeah, David Arquette. Okay. Yeah. Scotty Conn. Okay. Yeah. Oliver Platt. What?
And isn't that the guy my parents like?
Yeah.
Like, that was my reaction.
And he's Jimmy King. And he's like, look, this movie sucks. This movie's great, though. And he is so good in the role of Jimmy King. He's very entertaining. For it. He embraces the stupidity of this entire process.
Like, David Arquette is playing the David Arquette character. A guy who loves wrestling, like he's playing him before he got into acting in WCW. That's what I feel like that
David Arquette is playing that version, that thing that David Arquette does where it's like he's kind of quiet and reserved and dumb, but like he has a heart of gold and really loves stuff.
But then he breaks out of his shell.
Yeah, and becomes the law.
And then Scott Conn is playing I'm attractive and very cool guy.
Yeah, Scott Conn is playing his fast talking best friend.
Yeah, I mean, and he plays
Scott Conn is playing Scott. Yeah, Scott Conn is playing Scott Conn from the Oceans franchise.
Exactly. Rose McGowan is here as Sasha,
a Nitro girl.
The most Nitro of Nitro girls, according to
the Nitroest of Nitro girls.
The Nitroest of the Nitro girls.
Joe Pantoliano plays Titus Sinclair. Now, this
oh my God! Fine, can we just say that Joey Pants is fantastic as the antagonist in this movie?
He is the head booker of WCW. He is the Eric Bischoff of WCW. And fun note, evidently Eric Bischoff was originally up to play this role, and then like stuff happened and it didn't work out, and like, oh no, they had to go with their second choice, Joe Pantoliano.
a good actor, an incredible actor.
Yeah, and like he's rocking the ponytail and the leather jacket and like the hat, like He embraces being a scumbaggy wrestling promoter in the best way.
We also have Chris Owen, who you probably know from the American Pie series as the Terminator guy. He plays kid playing bad video game arcade cabinet that the boys meet up with, and then they hack to find Jimmy King lives.
There's a lot of people, like Amit Zapp is in this movie. Martin Landau is playing essentially Stu Hart, Sal Bandini.
Yes. Yes.
He's like, you want to wrestle? Like, that's Stu Hart in a nutshell. Geez, it's crazy. Caroline Ray is in this movie as Jimmy King's estranged wife.
As woman who scratches her crotch and butt a lot.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, look,
we got to get to the, yeah, let's get.
I don't think we should describe this movie point by point. I'd like to just talk about some moments in here.
Well, and one of them I want to talk about is, Matt, who is Titus Sinclair Joe Pantoliano's, like, a number one sidekick in this movie?
The biggest heel in all of wrestling, DDP.
Diamond Dallas Page. The wrestler DDP that everyone so loves to hate. No, he is a fantastic heel in this movie, which is weird because, like, it's hard to hate DDP.
Yeah.
He's positively
good
Page.
In this role.
He's very good as, like, the guy who, like, he feels like he's been held back by Jimmy King. So Oliver Platt plays Jimmy King, who's like the eternal Hulk Hogan style babyface, Hulkamania style babyface of WCW. He's had the title for so long. He's an insane redneck who lives in a trailer, dresses in women's clothing to avoid, like, bill collectors, and, like, is, like, kind of scumbaggy.
Yeah.
And
not a good person, but for some reason, everyone in the world loves him.
Yes.
And, like, and he's also kind of a scumbag on TV.
So, yeah, like the Hulk Hogan character.
Yeah, but Hogan wasn't, like, real life scumbag on TV. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you're right.
Like, there's nothing redeeming about Jimmy King, the character. Nothing.
Except for the fact that he's actually Oliver Platt.
That's great. Let me move that mic up a little bit. So, there we go.
So, yeah, so DDP is looking to make his mark on the WCW, and Titus Sinclair essentially tells him, like, tonight's your night. You're taking out the king. And then, like, they Montreal Screwjob Jimmy King. This movie's about the Montreal Screwjob, kind of?
Let's take a quick moment to sidetrack very quickly and say, out of every movie about wrestling, maybe aside from, like, The Wrestler and Beyond the Mat, this movie gets wrestling right, like, how it works so well, where they're backstage, like, saying, like, okay, you're gonna get the win tonight, here's what's gonna happen during the match. Like, you don't see that in wrestling movies now. Like, it's treated as, like, these matches are real and it could go either way when it hasn't been predetermined. So when DDP's throwing real punches at Jimmy King, and Jimmy's like, hey, baby, what you doing here? Like, because that's kind of what he sounds like.
Matt, hey, baby, what you doing it's here? Scary how well you nailed that.
Hey, baby, what you doing here? Hey, baby, what you doing here?
Baby, no.
Come on, baby, we'll be best friends. Remember back in Memphis? That's a terrible Jimmy King impression.
I will rule you.
It's so bad. But when he's taking the real punches and he says, hey, baby, what you doing here? it just makes sense. Like, it's cool to see a wrestling movie, especially during 2000 when kayfabe is still kind of a thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's really cool to see them do this and, like, treat wrestling the way it should be treated.
Yeah.
In a movie.
It's great.
Chris, I want to talk about this opening really quick. We've skipped over a lot. But do you remember in the late 90s to early 2000s when, like, the Zappas were in everything?
Yeah.
All of Frank Zappa's kids. This is one of them.
Moon Unit
Zappa, Ahmet Zappa. Who was the other one that was actually in everything? Oh, come on.
Frank Zappa?
I mean, he was the
Dweezil.
Dweezil, thank you. All the Zappa kids were in. And in the opening of this movie, Ahmet Zappa plays a convenience store clerk. David Arquette wants to get a refill on a slushie, but doesn't have money because he doesn't have he has a job. How could he not? Hold on a second. Hold on. My brain. Okay, Chris. Okay. So Gordy and I'm just going to call him Sean and David's characters because I don't like their names. Okay, fine. Sean and Gordy, they own their own, like, suck poo
do,
up company.
Do we know that they own it?
They said they own the truck. If they own the truck, I'm assuming they own the business.
Oh, wow. I thought they would just work for a...
No, the
essentially,
the
truck... their job is to clean out porta potties.
Yes, but I believe what Sean says at one part during the movie is that when his father died, he left him the truck.
Oh, wow.
That was the only thing his dad left him.
That's incredibly sad.
It is. But I mean, like, they have a job together where they clean up portable. Like, they have a, that, say what you want about the idea of dirty job. Like, that's a good job that, like, I'm sure pays well if you have your own equipment.
Mm-hmm.
Why can't he afford a 157 slushy or whatever it is? That's where I'm like, what is going on? Anyways, David Arquette puts his hand in his butt and says that he drank the slushy even though it smelled like poo, and then makes the Ahmet Zappa smell his finger. I've already skipped over the part where, like, there's a dream wrestling match. So David Arquette wants to get a slushy, but he has a dream that he fights Ahmet Zappa. And then, like, mm-hmm. Macho Man comes in and they wrestle in the convenience store in one of the weirdest openings to anything ever.
Because doesn't Ahmet Zappa bring in Macho Man?
Yeah, and then Jimmy King comes in.
Now, Matt, fun story about this particular scene.
Oh, like, is there a fun story?
There is. Oliver Platt accidentally friggin' cold cocked Macho Man Randy Savage during the scene.
Oh, no.
And evidently that shot is included in a blooper reel on the DVD.
God, I wish I had the DVD of this.
I'm on eBay right now and I'm considering buying it. Let me see if I can find it cheap. Let me sort. I'm on eBay. Look, we've done this before. We've bought things as we're talking about it before. That's how we ended up getting the McMahon DVD.
This is a convenience store. It has comics, it has food. There is a fresh produce section in the back.
Yeah.
I see cabbage, I see green bean, like a really well stocked fresh food area. They've got beer. I'm just looking at everything. Wait. Oh, I gotta mute this. Sorry.
Gotta mute.
Okay, one. There we go. Whew. This is a nice little convenience store with, like, real food in it that, like, you can pick up a few quick groceries. And I'm at Zappa. I don't know if he owns this place. I don't know if he's just working here. Why are they so mean to this guy? Anyway,
well, so, like, David Arquette, did you explain how the scene unfolded where David Arquette wanted a refill on his Slurpee, so he stuck his hand in his butt?
Yeah, and then he makes it smell it. But yeah. Like, why are they doing that? But why is he being so mean? Because the guy's like, oh my God, I'm so sorry about that. Like, let me get you another cup and, like, another Slurpee.
It makes me scared and sad, to be honest.
Because there's a sign right here. This is, by the way, this, if you're not pausing this movie like I am constantly, the Slurpee he's drinking is called Jimmy King's Royal Freeze.
Wow.
Guys, it costs $1.25, which is written on a paper plate.
I just want you to know I'm placing a bid on the Ready to Rumble DVD.
Okay, good. So this is how
what flavor do we think Jimmy King's Royal Freeze is?
It's purple.
What flavor, though?
But grape. I mean, purple is grape, right? Plum, it could be. Like, eggplant. I don't. It's grape.
Okay.
Anyways, fine. These guys are in the they're in the West. Wyoming, Montana, something like that. Wyoming, because they go to Cheyenne, right? Is Cheyenne in Wyoming? I don't know states and cities at all. Anyway, guys.
You're doing great, Matt. You're doing great.
I am so confused by the opening scene of this movie, which I've seen 100 times, probably. I don't, like, I guess we're trying to introduce the characters. It doesn't make any sense to me. That's no. All. And the whole story is, like, David Arquette's character is like, I'm going to break away from my family. My dad wants me to be a state trooper. I'm making this movie sound so much smarter than it is.
So, like, his dad wants him to be a state trooper. He wants to. It's not clear that he wants to be a wrestler, really. It's just clear that he is obsessed with wrestling.
He wants to find his own path. I mean, that's the idea that at this point in time, like, what, these kids are in their young, early 20s, mid 20s at this point. They have maybe a career. I don't know. They've got a good job and it's so weird. I understand, I guess, you know, parents want what's best for their kid, and what they think is best for their kid is what they do.
Yeah.
I don't want my son to be a writer. Yeah, let him do whatever he wants, but I'm not a state.
Meanwhile, trip. Scott Kahn is just kind of coasting through life, you know.
He's got his own poop company.
Yeah, he owns the truck, evidently.
He owns the truck. He's got this poop company.
He employs his best friend. They go to professional wrestling. What a good friendship. Shows.
Like, what a good friendship. We're like, David Arquette's character is not going through hard times or anything. He's trying to find his way through life. And Scott Conn's character is like, hey, come work with me. We could be best friends at this job. And like, you could not afford $1.57 Slurpees at that point. That must be paying terrible.
Yeah. What a horrible job.
Yeah.
But those, or maybe jobs- he's just cheap, honestly.
Maybe. What if he's frugal and just wants to,
he's saving his money for wrestling school.
Or just to go to every WCW show possible.
So, okay. So they go to a WCW show to see their hero, Jimmy King, wrestle against Dallas Page.
Chris, the seats that these guys sit in, they are under a steel beam that they can't see.
Yeah. They have to bend down. Like, yeah, the joke is that they have the cheapest, worst seats imaginable, and they're still over the friggin' moon about it.
That's kind of endearing, I guess.
Yeah. Well, and just so we're all clear on what era of WCW this is the worst stage in WCW where they walk out of the giant sea and it opens up like a mouth.
Mm-hmm.
It's ugly as hell. And also what's weird is this is something, I don't know if you noticed this, Matt, the way WCW shot it for TV made it look pretty big. The way it shot for the movie makes it look tiny.
Yes. Yeah.
It looked like it's clear that it was not filmed. There was no consultation on how it was filmed by anyone from WCW because they make it look much more bush league than it actually was.
Mm-hmm.
And as we said, DDP turns heel for real and just beats the snot out of Jimmy King. A bunch of wrestlers come to make the save, and then they also beat up Jimmy King. And that's when we get the four-post massacre, Matt.
I would like to talk about the four-post massacre. I'm just fast-forwarding so I can get, because I remember one's Bam Bam Bigelow, because
I think Saturn, maybe?
Okay, so Prince Iaukea, Sid Vicious, Perry Saturn's one of them. Okay, so it's Prince Iaukea, Perry Saturn, Bam Bam Bigelow, and
is it Van Hammer?
Hooventoot.
Oh, Hoovy.
Yeah.
Wait, Unmasked Rey Mysterio is in this movie.
Yeah, he is.
Matt, do you know who else is in this movie?
Conan, I believe Scott Norton.
No, the surprise
Mr. Perfect. Or I'm sorry, Kurt
Hennig. No, we'll go through the list, but there is an uncredited appearance in this movie of one Canyon. John Cena.
Wait, really?
John Cena from his UPW days. I'm assuming they shot in the UPW gym back when he was doing his prototype stuff there, but John Cena can be seen in the scene where Jimmy King goes to talk to Goldberg in the gym.
Uh-huh.
John Cena can be seen doing weights in the back with his prototype mohawk.
Okay.
Well, they talk to Goldberg. Technically,
this is much later in the movie.
Yeah, technically, Ready to Rumble is John Cena's first movie.
Oh,
which
boy,
respect him so much more as an actor.
I'm trying to find the Goldberg scene. I apologize. I'm very quiet, but I am. All right, there's the gym.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I'm looking. Goldberg.
Cena is behind Jimmy King. So it's the over the shoulder shot of Goldberg.
Okay, here we go. I'm watching the scene now. Goldberg
look is on the left side of the screen.
Okay, there's no one there yet, but Jimmy King is talking. Hey, baby, I just want to tell you about we're great friends, baby. Remember Bill, baby, when I helped you out? Oh, wow!
Do you see him?
Dude, it is 1,000,000% him with that terrible hair.
With that bleached white mohawk.
It is a split second.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
But that is John Cena's first movie.
I can now use that in the movie game. Hey, Kurt. Wow, John Cena's in this movie.
Yeah, okay. Well, but like, let's get, well, but I sorry, I had to detract there because it's okay. I found that to be okay. Very important. Let's get back on task. Jimmy King loses. The four-post massacre, like they talk about it as if it's the worst thing that's ever happened to a human being.
Or that it's a thing in general.
Or that it's a thing we as wrestling fans all know is definitely real.
Oh my god, a four-post massacre!
It's fine. Like, it doesn't look particularly devastating.
It looks like four people jumping on a guy.
It looks like two body splashes and two headbutts, kinda.
I mean, the worst is still the concerto.
Yeah.
The worst looking.
Oh, yeah.
But I mean, they didn't, there's no concertos in this movie.
No, that wasn't invented yet.
That concerto was around at that time.
I don't think so. That was latter day Edge and Christian. That was when, because the Hardys had the ladders, the Dudleys had the tables, and Edge and Christian had to come up with their thing, and it was chairs.
Oh, man, I might have to ask Google when the concerto was.
You might, you know what? You actually might be right. Anyway, so Jimmy King is destroyed. He is essentially, Titus Sinclair essentially runs him out of the WCW. And I don't know why I keep calling it the WCW, but the WCW. And who else can help him but Gordy and Sean? And evidently Chris Owens' character, who's just playing the Jimmy King arcade game at a convenience store. Matt, are you looking up when was the concerto invented?
Yeah.
I told you, you're probably right.
Oh, I just want to know. First concertos from Edge.
Gonna make me look
2001 bad. Was one of the first. So, okay.
Okay.
Concerto wasn't invented.
I win.
You win. It wasn't more about who wins, who loses. It was more about, like, I'm generally curious about this.
So they're able, with the help of Chris Owen, they're able to track down where Jimmy King lives, and his castle is but a crappy trailer, and he's wearing a dress and hiding from bill collectors and just generally down, because guess what, Matt? He got screwed over by the boss.
Chris, this is where we jump into, again, I'm going to make this movie sound so much smarter than it actually is. This is the second hero's journey tale within the movie. We've already established Scott Conn and David Arquette's hero's journey. It's more David's than anybody else's. Scott's is kind of just along for the ride. But this is the call to arms moment for Jimmy King and the denial of the call, where they're trying to get Jimmy to, like, come wrestle again. And it's so weird to see, like, this story, this type of story layered upon each other like this. It's weird in a good way, because I think it's a really clever and interesting thing to do. It's something that we have seen in sports movies before and movies before, where two people have to rise to the call to get somebody else to rise to the call.
Absolutely.
I love that story. It's just so weird to see it in a movie that spent about 2 minutes having a scene of two men talking, eating sandwiches, with a sewage container next to them, in between them, leaking liquid feces.
Oh, it's so gross. There's so much, like, this. We're in the era of the gross out comedy with this movie.
Yeah.
And man, they really take it to disturbing lengths that, like, I'm not okay with.
It's not. The funniest thing about that scene to me is that no one pays attention to it.
Yeah, they're not, like, acknowledging it, because it's just part of their normal day,
which is wonderful. But to me, it's like, get this, like, early Coen brothers crap out of here, please.
Wow.
What a weird movie. Anyway, okay, so they get Jimmy King, they gotta make him find his smile again.
So they helped Jimmy King break back into Nitro. It's unclear if he was fired or, like, but he wasn't.
Fired.
They snuck him in.
In a porta potty, because
in a porta potty, because that's what they do. And he confronted Titus Sinclair on national television, and, like, he didn't want it, but Gordy got Titus to agree to give Jimmy a rematch, with, like, $1 million on the line.
Sure.
Like, that's the weird thing. Okay, so he demands a rematch, and finally Titus relents and says, fine, inside of the triple decker steel cage, as if that's just a thing they have hanging out backstage. And he says it'll be for the WCW championship and $1 million.
Cool.
Sure, why not? But if King loses, he has to retire. It says if King loses, he can never wrestle again, which, like, in the world of this movie, you've already fired him, so he can't wrestle again.
Yeah. And it's obvious there's no WWE in this universe.
Yeah.
So
there's no mention of WWF, WWE, indie wrestling. There's no mention of anything in it. It's as if wrestlers are born in WCW and then die in WCW.
I would say that there is some sorts of a semblance of indie wrestling. I only say that based on like Sal Bandini being a part of this. He's like, I train wrestlers that wrestle all around the world. It's like, there's just,
you're right. You're right.
To
my
me,
bad.
It seems like there might be indie wrestling, but there's nothing major like WCW.
Yeah, you are correct. Meanwhile, Gordy is falling in love with Nitro girl, Sasha. And she is for some reason interested in him.
Rose McGowan.
Rose McGowan at peak Rose McGowan.
I feel, in the middle of we're gonna call this in the middle of peak Rose McGowan,
because Scream this is kind of peak Rose McGowan,
and this is very much like a I gotta do a movie type area.
Honestly, I don't think there is a peak Rose McGowan. There's Rose McGowan is just great across the board.
Yeah, I really
now that
enjoy
I'm thinking it. Of it, like I love Rose McGowan. Like, she, yeah, she's just great. But
for
like
her, for the role she's in, she feels too good for this role.
Okay, so Matt, good. I'm glad you said that, because I had forgotten she was in this. And as we were watching this in the hotel room in Dallas, because like everybody, I need you guys to understand, while we're recording this from our respective homes, Matt and I watched this in the hotel at WrestleMania weekend. Yeah. That was the first thing we did, I think. No, we did that a couple of days later because we got too tired.
And then my mic broke after recording three podcasts and we couldn't record this one.
But we watched it together, and as I'm watching it, like, I forgot that Rose McGowan was in this. And when she pops up, I was like, oh no, she deserves more than this. She deserves more than to be the object of these idiots' affections and a Nitro girl.
And she's so good.
She's very good, because like what you ultimately learn is that like she's in league with Titus Sinclair and is just trying, she's helping him get to Gordy and Sean and blah blah blah, but like she plays the role so well. And like Rose McGowan has, and I would say that for a couple people in this movie, including Oliver Platt, impeccable comedic timing.
She
is hilarious in this movie. Hilarious in this movie. And like even so far as to like the way the production designers built her apartment, where it's like artistic interpretations of her.
It's
so good. Like there's that almost Andy Warhol-ish painting on the wall that's just four different color versions of her.
Yes,
like it's perfect. It's so good.
What happens after that, Chris? I completely forgot.
Well, so then that's when the hero's journey kicks in.
That's where the Sal Bandini's, you want to wrestle. Yeah.
They go to Sal Bandini. He says, you want to wrestle? And like, he's essentially, again, he's Stu Hart. He's stretching him out. He's doing the Sal Bandini thing.
I want to note that at this point in the movie, we are over an hour into an hour and 46 minute movie.
Yeah.
So like pacing wise, it's a little,
it meanders for a while, and then it's like, we got movie to get through. And then it blazes through so much. It blazes through the comeback of Jimmy King. He goes to Goldberg. First of all, he goes to Goldberg to essentially try to bury the hatchet for being a scumbag, which I appreciate.
What's going on, baby?
Yeah. He comes to understand that like he's been terrible to his coworkers. And
I don't think he understands that.
Really?
I would say that the Jimmy King character is a terrible person start to finish, who feigns that he's sorry and that he has an understanding of what's gone wrong. All he sees in his mind, to me, as someone who's watched this at least 50 times, I'd say.
Okay.
What I see is a character who is doing everything he can to get back on top and does not give a shit about anyone else around him. But he will manipulate everyone else around him to get what he wants.
Interesting. So you think by the end of the movie, he's learned nothing?
I don't think he's learned a thing. I think after this movie's done, he never talks to his ex-wife. He never talks to his son again. He just continues on.
Oh, Matt, explain the son.
Jimmy King has a son who is a tall boy, man, who works on cars. He's got braces. I block the son out for some reason when I'm thinking about it.
Doesn't the son end up in league with Titus Sinclair?
Yes, he does. Yeah, he does. And then Jimmy King like sees him in the match, like, oh, I love you, baby, you're my son, baby. And then they're best friends or whatever, but it's all facade. It is all complete BS to me. I don't see Jimmy King capable of change over the course of 3 days.
Yeah, no.
Because that's not... he hasn't hit what I would consider for a character like that for when we see his backstory, or who he really is before wrestling. I don't think we've seen his rock bottom.
I think that's fair.
I think he's returned to like normalcy before fame for him, which is being a piece of crap.
I hope that's not what it is, though. Like, I hope he's better.
Yeah, I mean, you can all hope for someone to change, but sometimes pieces of crap continue to be pieces of crap. I mean,
fair enough. fair enough. So, okay, we're good. So we get to the final match. The match finally comes. DDP and Titus Sinclair's goons have been dispatched to hospitalize Sal Bandini, so he can't be there for the match.
Yeah. How was Moppy? Was Moppy okay?
Oh, Moppy.
R.I.P.
R.I.P. Moppy. And then it comes to the... Oh, and Gordy kind of abandons the team because he feels like a failure, so he's just going to join the police like his dad wants him to.
That's that really... And that's a part, something I like from the hero's journey, where it's like... It's not every hero's journey story, but where you kind of... The protagonist gives into the status quo only to realize like they need to make the call again and stand up for what's right. And I really, really, that's one of the things I kind of love about this movie, where Theodore Kitt's like, I just gotta be a cop, man. I just gotta grow up. This is like ridiculous. But yeah. Then he's like, no, screw growing up. Like, I've gotta like go after my dreams. Like, I actually super like that about this movie, even though it's him.
And it's all spurned on by finding out that Sasha is actually not in love with.
And he treats that for an immature character. He treats it like so mature. He's just like, yeah, hey, you're betraying me, so you can't come with us. Like, that's how it ends. And I'm like, wow, this character has grown so much.
Yeah.
He started off yelling like, boobies. To, hey, like, listen, you betrayed me. I'm not cool with that.
You're a bad person.
I believe he says you're a bad person.
Yeah.
Something along the lines of that. And like that. Yeah. I'm like, yeah, hell yeah. Like, good for you, buddy. Jimmy King, though, can't change. Garbage person.
Yeah, absolutely not. So he goes home, and Sean and Jimmy sort of continue on and make it to the match, where Sean becomes Jimmy's manager. He's just dressed as he's dressed in like one of the Cherry Poppin' Daddy's costumes, it looks like.
You remember when zoot suits were everywhere?
And like and not just regular zoot suits, but like bright orange zoot suits.
You remember prom, right, Chris?
Oh, God.
How many zoot suits did you see?
I did not go to prom.
I went, and a lot of my friends were in zoot suits. I was in a tuxedo.
Zoot suit riot.
Although I did have my pocket watch chain out. So that was pretty cool.
So he shows up in a bright orange zoot suit. He is Jimmy King's manager. Nickname, Sugar Daddy.
Sugar Daddy, baby. Sugar Daddy, baby.
And, like, honestly, it kind of goes the way you're expecting it to go. DDP and his posse beat the crap out of him. Mm-hmm. Until, Matt, finally, Gordy finds it within himself to follow his dreams. And he shows up as a wrestler. What's that wrestler's name, Matt?
The Law.
The Law. He's the big boss man. He's a CHP. He's a highway patrol version of the big boss man. He shows up on a police motorcycle in the cop costume, and he helps like beat up the bad guys. And then everyone else joins in, and it just becomes. And so
everyone else includes Rey Mysterio, Conan. Oh, God, off the top of my head. There's
Disco Goldberg, Inferno, Sting, Disco Inferno, Goldberg, Booker, the Book of Man, Booker T. It's wild. Finally, the DDP and Jimmy King get to the top of the third cage, which is where the title is.
By the way, this cage idea conceptually looks awesome.
It looks awesome, but then they did it in WCW, and it was terrible. And
it was so bad. So bad.
Not surprisingly, Jimmy King wins the title back. Gordy and Sean beat up Titus Sinclair. And Goldberg asks to reform his team with Jimmy King, and Jimmy King turns him down and says Gordy will be then his new partner.
Chris, Titus Sinclair is still in charge,
or is he?
That is something that like is not addressed at the end of this movie. Like,
that's why this movie gets a lot about wrestling right and also gets a lot of it incredibly wrong.
You have destroyed the Booker, who is a bad boy. But
not Booker T.
No, not the Booker man. I'm talking about Titus Sinclair. He has been seemingly defeated, but when like the next Monday Nitro comes around, Titus Sinclair is still in charge and still the boss of Jimmy King and now Gordy and Sean.
Yeah, it's interesting.
It is a
we'll never know because they didn't make part two. Well, they kind of did, because in the real world, to promote the movie, we can now talk about this a bit. David Arquette actually joined WCW, accidentally became WCW champion, and then ended up defending the title in a triple threat match inside of the triple cage. And he turned heel on DDP, and then Double J got the title. It's a whole thing. It's bad. It's a whole bad thing.
I believe we talked about David Arquette's rise.
Go back. You should go back and listen to the David Arquette episode, because I fully
defend him looking back, saying essentially like he was given a bad role and made it work.
Yeah. Well, that, I mean,
you're supposed to hate him.
And I do.
I don't
hate him.
There is just something about this horrible, horrible, horrible movie that I love so much.
I'll say this.
Yeah.
Rotten Tomatoes rating of 23%.
Mm-hmm.
Metacritic.
It's a bad movie.
Metacritic gives it a 23 out of 100. So it's saying.
Wow.
Roger Ebert said the movie... This is from the Wikipedia. Roger Ebert says the movie works best when focusing on aspects of professional wrestling instead of the quote wheezy prefab Dumb and Dumber antics.
Yeah, it is really there are a lot of poor man's Dumber Dumber moments in here.
The soundtrack, which it was requested by a listener that we talk about the soundtrack a brief minute. I'm gonna hit you with some names that are on this soundtrack, Matt.
Okay, cool.
The Offspring, Biff Naked, Kid Rock, Run DMZ. The aforementioned Dweezil Zappa, who is responsible for the DDP theme in the movie.
That's how I met got in there.
POD, House of Pain, Scott Weiland and DJ Hurricane have a cover of We Will Rock You by Queen. Papa Roach's Last Resort is in this. Ahmet Zappa and Dweezil Zappa do a cover of Baby One More Time on this soundtrack. Hit Me Baby One More Time. Okay. And Motley Crue's Girls, 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 which I believe plays during the Nitro Girls scene.
Nitro Girls. This is a soundtrack that, again, that super plays to me in 2000, or just in 2000, even though I don't think I own a bunch of STP albums, but I don't think I owned any of the other albums that were mentioned. But I would still like, oh, POD and Papa Roach are in this? Yeah, I'll go see that movie.
I got it. I need it. I got to get it.
I will. There's only really one maybe two soundtracks I own, and it's, you know, Purple Rain and then the Batman soundtrack.
I have
both by Prince.
If you want to know all the wrestlers that are in this, I can go through the list.
Please.
Goldberg,
do.
DDP, Sting, Booker T, Macho Man, Randy Savage, Bam Bam Bigelow, Sid Vicious, Juventud Guerrera, Kurt Hennig, Disco Inferno, Billy Kidman, Conan, Rey Mysterio Jr., Perry Saturn, Prince Iaukea, Van Hammer, Gorgeous George, who was Randy Savage's valet at the time.
Yes.
Michael Buffer, Gene Okerlund, Tony Schiavone, Mike Tenay, referee Charles Robinson, Lil Nate, and referee Billy Silverman. Nitro Girls, Che, Fire, Spice, Storm, and Tigress. And of course, uncredited John Cena. That's pretty good.
I believe Chris Kanyon did the wrestling consultation for the movie.
So that's when we get into the doubles. So Kanyon was the stunt double for Oliver Platt. And the stunt double for David Arquette. And you might have seen him before in the Law costume with David Arquette on set is Sugar Shane Helms, the Hurricane.
That's right.
Yeah. And as mentioned before, Titus Sinclair is based on Eric Bischoff, though it's weird. It seems like he's nothing like Eric Bischoff.
No, he seems like a guy that like went to the Black Hills for a week for vacation and got really into Native American stuff.
And probably ate a bunch of peyote.
Probably.
Yeah. So yeah, that's Ready to Rumble. It cost $24 million to make, and Matt, it made $12.5 million.
I can tell you without a doubt that I saw it most likely opening weekend. I did only see this in the theaters once, though.
You fake fan.
Yeah, I am a fake fan. I mean, I own it on maybe DVD somewhere.
I'm about to own it on DVD. DVD I found is unopened. It's brand spanking new.
Well, of course it is, because no one wants to watch this.
Well, there's a lot of used copies on eBay. There's also a German import with much cooler box art.
Yeah, the box art is like Scott Kahn and David Arquette in a headlock.
Yeah, they're getting muscle boyed.
Chris, please rate this out of libraries.
Ooh, out of how many libraries, Matt? Give me a number.
Oh, no, that's always your call.
Okay, I'm going to give it to 17 out of 49 libraries.
That's a very good score.
I was entertained.
I'm going to go 1 out of 1.
Wow, that's fantastic.
Yeah. That's on Vudu, it has 13,368 reviews, coming in at a little over 4 stars. Because
how many of these did you write?
Get it. What?
How many of those did you write?
12,000.
Okay.
And they were all 5 stars.
Of course they were.
I mean, if I'm going to go in the star system, it's a bad movie, but movie wise, it's a 1.5 or 2, but I enjoy the hell out of it. It's a 4 for me.
Fantastic. And that's all I can ask for.
Yeah. That's all I want. I just want to be entertained. Diamond Dallas Page is a bad guy. Oh, Voodoo's got all these. Oh, Billy Kidman. I think we forgot to mention him.
Nope. I mentioned him.
I swear to God, I saw Scott Norton too, but he's not listed. All right, whatever. Hey, that's episode 100. We did it. We finally talked about Ready to Rumble.
You watch your silly mouth, Matt.
I mean, no, that's. Oh yeah, that's right. Let's go to the mailbag.
To the mailbag.
You got a mailbag, and I gotta read it. There we go.
Is that the mailbag song?
It's different every time, and it's just as bad every time. Right.
Matt, what's the first wrestling? This comes from D9000 at Dell 9000. What is the first wrestling match you can remember that really blew your freaking mind? Mine was 1-2-3 Kid beating Razor Ramon.
Okay. Sometimes I want to say Hulk Hogan body slamming Andre the Giant. I was 3 when that happened. I was not even 3 yet. I was almost 3. Mm-hmm. Hey, it would not be a special episode of Wrestle Buddies without Editor Matt, and that's me, Editor Matt. I'm here. WrestleMania 3 happened on March 29th, 1987. At that point in time, I had just turned 5. I was not turning 3. I was probably confusing it with the Super Bowl where the Bears won when I was 3 years old and about to turn 4. I do not remember much of that at all, except for the Super Bowl shuffle, because I'm not here to cause any trouble. Back to the show. Things that blew, I'd say wrestling that blew my mind. We're going to go with this. Please feel free to laugh. I think it's Lex Luger slamming Yokozuna on the USS Intrepid.
Really?
I think
American made Lex.
Yeah.
Wow. That's pretty dope. For me, it was I liked wrestling. I thought wrestling was cool, but I think I thought wrestling was cool because the other dudes in the neighborhood thought it was cool.
Okay.
And I didn't really understand it, but my mom bought me a ticket to go to a house show. And it was the first time I got to go somewhere alone, Matt. Like I because my parents did not want to go to wrestling because they thought it was dumb. And one of the matches on the house show, it was Undertaker versus Yokozuna in a cage.
Oh, damn, dude.
And it was so cool seeing these, like, even from my crappy seats, these dudes were so big. They were massive. And like that's when it and obviously two very over the top type characters. That's when it clicked for me. I was like, oh, this is what wrestling is. I get it. And then I ran down and stuck my hand out. A Macho Man gave me a high five, and that was great.
I got another time that it blew my mind. Okay. Maybe this is, I think this is earlier. It's when, and it, again, these aren't matches. These are just moments, because I'm more of a moments over matches guy.
Mm-hmm.
It is Papa Shango putting a curse on Ultimate Warrior. And Ultimate Warrior was in like a weird blue track jacket, I believe.
Oh, was this when Ultimate Warrior started puking up? Like,
not puking, the black blood.
Oh, black bleeding. Yeah. God, what a dumb, like, I love that stuff. Dude, when the snake bit Macho Man.
Oh my God. Yeah. That was real.
Yeah, dude.
A real freaking bite.
Roddy Piper hitting Jimmy Snuka with a coconut during the Piper's Pit. Like, that stuff sticks out.
Do you want to hear my most recent time of wrestling blowing my mind?
Yeah.
Raw dark match, Cody Rhodes versus Kevin Owens. Like, I was so like, when we saw that live a few weeks ago, I was like, I wanted to almost start crying. I got so excited for that.
It just felt good. And I feel like a lot of times those Raw dark matches after the show are very quick, like get out a couple of finishers and go home. They fought around the ring. They fought on the announce. Like, it was all over the place.
It was a good, like, 8-minute match.
Yeah,
like,
it was a very fun match. We got one more question from D9000, Matt, and then we'll wrap up this mailbag and our 100th episode. Which professional wrestler would you most like to be neighbors with? And which one would you least like to be neighbors with? I'll let you go first, unless you would like me to go first.
You had a longer time to think about this.
Let me think. I didn't think about it at all, Matt.
Are we talking about the professional wrestler character, or are we talking about the person behind the character?
I think it's the character.
Okay.
I think it's which character. I'm going to be honest with you. I'm going to pick Bianca Belair.
Okay.
Because that means I also get to live next door to Montez Ford because they're married. That's cool. So I got a couple of very cool neighbors. Also, like, I feel like they'd be okay with me blasting Bianca's theme song a bunch. You know what I mean?
I don't know. You probably come off really weird, stalky.
But I'm on my own against the world.
Okay.
I never needed you at all. Do 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 do.
All right. My most that I like to live next to character, it would be $1 million Man Ted DiBiase.
Oh, because that means you're rich?
No, it doesn't mean I'm rich, but if I ever needed a little extra money, I would just have to humiliate myself in front of him to give me some money.
That's smart, Matt. You know what? I changed my vote. I'd like to be neighbors with Edge and Beth Phoenix because they live in like the mountains, and like that sounds great.
Also, they're like very, from what I've seen in documentary stuff, very family oriented. I feel like my family.
And very
family,
chill.
Like, we have the same values. I would also like Edge and Beth Phoenix and their children. But for least, Cameron Grimes, because he's going to talk about crypto to me
much. The last thing I want on this earth is to have a discussion with Cameron Grimes about NFTs.
Second place is Darby Allin, because he's just going to be. He's going to be an annoying neighbor, like burning stuff and like
skateboarding on top of my car.
Yeah. And I'm a family man. I don't want you doing that. And I don't, none of my backyard.
And I'm willing to bet Darby Allin would also talk to me about NFTs.
He probably would.
I'd be like, I don't want to hear it, sir. I don't.
I don't know if he's an NFT guy.
But would you be surprised if he was?
At this point, I'm not surprised if anyone is.
Yeah.
If you were, I'd be super surprised.
I'd be like,
that's about it.
I'm trying to, No.
No.
I think NFTs are dumb.
I mean, I'm into stocks kind
and
of.
And I'll tell you what, I don't care if I'm wrong. I don't care if I'm wrong. NFTs are dumb and I don't care if I'm wrong.
At the point they are at right now with how they work, they are very dumb. I don't, could they be something great in the future? Yeah. What?
No.
Now they are dumb.
No, they can't.
There's a possibility for anything.
They're dumb.
As it exists right now, they are very dumb. Could it evolve into something great?
No.
Maybe.
No. I disagree.
We did it. Come back next week for episode 119 or 18.
19.
We'll have Adam Cole on the entire episode.
Baby.
I know it's a long interview. I don't know.
It's a pretty lengthy.
It's a whole episode.
Yeah. And it's not structured in a way you might expect most of our interviews to go. It's a chat. Like, we have a discussion about video games.
We're hanging out with Adam Cole.
Because that's what we wanted to do. We were like, we could talk. Everyone wants to talk to Adam Cole about his time in AEW and blah, blah, blah. Like, we just want to chat about stuff. That's it.
First member of the Three Timers Club on the show. Oh, I can't say that Keisha's been on three times.
That's true.
Second member of the Three Timers Club, right behind Keisha.
We talk about the Halo television show. All good stuff. All right, Matt. Let's burn this mother down.
Oh, we got a meeting in 5 minutes. So that's it for this week. We'll see you next week. Chris, any final words?
RoboCop.
See you next week.
Thanks for listening to Wrestle Buddies. We hope you had at least almost as much fun as we did. Go ahead and rate and review us on the Apple Podcast app. You can email us questions at WrestleBuddies@GameSpot.com or find us over on Twitter at WrestleBuddies. I am at Chris Hayner. He is at I'm Matt Elfring. See you next week.